lost to ignorance and confusion, three men arose from humble beginnings with a message of wisdom and hope for their troubled times. Three men who would eventually change the very face of humanity.
So, here are some other guys.
It's Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil.
Good evening, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, and all the ships at sea, except for one, and you know who you are. Welcome to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil, episode 212.
Woo!
Now, this is, folks, this is the show with songwriters talking to other songwriters about the craft of songwriting. Mm-hmm. It'd be like newbies, established professionals, anything in between. Mm-hmm. The idea is that we figure out all the stuff that we've discovered while writing songs. We share them with each other. The audience shares their stuff with us. And hopefully we all become a little bit better at writing songs.
That's the idea. Yeah.
And you can find us here every Tuesday at 7 p.m. here on CJRU 1280 a.m. here in Toronto. Or you can always listen to the live stream at songtalk.ca if you can't seem to get to the radio. Tonight, I'll be your host. My name is Phil Emery, and joining me tonight, as always, are the very dedicated members of the Song Talk Radio Action Team. Mr. Bruce Herron, how are you doing tonight?
Good evening. I'm fine. You know, I have a bit of a beef. It's something I need to get off my chest.
Uh-oh.
Some hair. No.
Right.
What's the beef?
No, I was looking at the top 50 on Spotify for Canada top 50. 85% of them are called explicit. Why? Huh? Why?
It sells.
Why do we need to be explicit?
It sells.
I'm just saying.
That's what the kids, that's what the kids
you,
are buying.
Phil.
All right. Well, you... Canada, you've been told. And, of course, Mr. Neil Modi, what's happening with you?
Oh, not much. I was excited to be here, but now I'm kind of worried because I'm not sure which ship is not at sea.
Oh.
No, I'm worried about that now.
They know.
I think there's a song there.
They know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Of course.
I don't.
And handling the social media, Vanessa Vreeland.
Hey, hello, Vanessa.
The hardest working woman.
And show
radio. Mm-hmm. Keep the ever watchful eye on the board, Linda Lavender.
Yay, Linda.
Thank you, Linda.
Hi.
During the show, we want to hear from you, so join in the conversation and send in your comments and questions to @songtalkradio on Twitter or send us an email at feedback@songtalk.ca. Yes, that is feedback@songtalk.ca. Or send us a message on Facebook and we'll share them with the audience in real time. And please stop by the website at songtalk.ca and find out how you can be a guest on our show.
Don't forget to tell them that the lyrics are up on the website, Phil.
Okay.
I think you just did.
Okay.
The lyrics are on the website, so you can follow along. You'll have to get your own bouncing ball, but they'll be there.
Yes. So this is going to be a fun show because we're going to be talking today about writing children's songs. And
Whoa.
This is something I literally know absolutely nothing about.
Mm-hmm.
And
was music banned for you when you were a child? Or?
That's true. There was kids' songs.
And there were.
Not recordings. There's no Raffi.
No?
No, none of that
No
stuff.
Sesame Street? When did Sesame Street start?
TV guys like, you know, Howdy Doody.
So if we could
What's wrong with TV?
Not go off the rails, you know, within the first 5 minutes.
Oh,
of the
you
show,
want to stay on script?
Good.
Oh, okay.
Helping
right.
us along tonight is one of our favorite guests, Mr. Robert Priest. Mr. Robert Priest is a Canadian poet, children's author, and singer-songwriter with 10 books of poetry, 2 wow. children's novels, 3 children's albums, and 4 CDs of songs and poems. Under the alias of Dr. Poetry, he has performed on CBC Radio's spoken word show, Word Beat, and is well known for his aphorisms and his song, Instead of a Kiss. Canadian novelist and short story writer Barbara Gowdy once described him as the voice of the people and the angels entwined. And the Toronto Star has called him passionate, cocky, alternatively adoring, and insulting.
That's awesome.
Robert, thanks for coming back.
Great to be here.
This is your second time here, so...
Yeah.
Thanks for coming back.
Yeah.
We appreciate it.
Yeah, the first time around, we had no idea that you did children's songs.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right,
right. You had sort of a folky, bluesy thing going on the first time.
So the question I have is, now this is something I realized I've written funk and punk and folk and classical and soundscapes for theater and movies and stuff, but I've never thought about doing children's songs. So what makes a song a children's song?
Well, I think... that it is in it's all of a child's world and in their vocabulary. So that if it's And a good melody, too, I think, you know, or a good groove. Like the things that make good music. But I think that the view of the song has to be that of, you know, that will appeal to a child, basically. So for me, it meant either sort of silly stuff or focusing on things like playgrounds and the things in, can you make a poem about a teeter-totter or stuff like that. So
okay, so it's... Now, is there a structural difference between like a normal sort of pop song versus a children's song? Or a...
Well, I think there can be, but I think it's, you know, musically they can be as variant as an adult song. I mean, you could have, there's rap songs sort of that are kids' songs, or, you know, verse, chorus, bridge, verse, chorus. Mm. Or just there's lots of children's songs that are kind of a loop that you feed new words into, like Found right. a Peanut and things like
right,
that, right?
Yeah.
So... Yeah.
So what's the difference? Is it the vocabulary?
I think it's partly the vocabulary, although typically for me, I don't tend to go around putting really long words in songs mm-hmm. anyways. It just doesn't suit my sense of music. Mm-hmm. But I think it is the point of view in a sense. You know, it's... Mm. Obviously for children, you're not writing about sex, so you can leave that out. You know, I mean, there are topics that just aren't right for children. Yeah. So it is...
Getting drunk on a Saturday night,
yeah,
for example.
It's like, yeah. The kids don't do that much.
So did you have kids to test this out on, your own children? Or?
Yeah.
Would you check out the song with them before you recorded it?
It would usually start with a lyric for me, so it would often be just checking a lyric out with a kid. When I started up with my partner that I've been with for I don't know how long, maybe 40 years, and her son, Ananda, was six, so and it was in the time of Star Wars in those days, so... A lot of the early work got written then, and I would run it by him and see if he liked it.
Really?
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah.
So do you start it now? Do you start off thinking, okay, I'm going to write some children's songs, or do you start working on a song and then realize that's where it's going? Or?
It's usually quite conscious that this one is for children for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have to be in a certain mood to do that, or you just decide that day you're going to do it?
Well... I think a certain mood applies. At least when I first started to do it, I leaned on that I'm in the mood to do that. I may have said this the last time I was here, but it often be because I write novels and adult songs, and I would spend a long day writing some of that stuff, and it would be towards the evening or late even at night, and when the walls are sort of coming down a bit that I would write. The simpler stuff for children and just pick out of maybe a lot of the complex imagery I might have been using during the day one sort of, there's an image there that you can, you know, unpack in a number of sort of related verses. Hmm. So it sounds like I thought about it a lot. Often it was really just very
automatic.
It was
a bit like dessert after a full day of dinner.
Yeah, it was a bit like that, yeah.
Well, exactly. It also sounds like you know when what time of day works best for you, that sort of thing.
Yeah,
right?
I would find out, yeah.
I'm just wondering on the musical side, isn't there an approach that almost demands simplicity? Like you're not gonna use dissonance in a way that you might use in a adult song.
It's a scary song, you would.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of children's scream core music.
No, but I mean, you kind of keep with majors and minors. You don't go to like even necessarily sevenths or suspended chords or things like that.
Well, when I write some of the kids' songs I have, I wrote the tunes for, and some other people wrote. Now, when I work with Al Booth, who wrote the songs we did last time, they sound pretty simple, but then when you look at the chord structures, you know, they're quite adventurous in many ways, but there's a through line that sounds natural. But there is some kind of dissonance. I know there's one song, The Mouse's Lullaby, and it's like a mouse is down a hall, and the kid is going to sleep, and the mouse is going, you know, that kind of song. And to sort of evoke the pipes, Al put in with a dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. He did this kind of rubby kind of pipe sound in there that you think, first you think, is that right? And yes, you know, it kind of works. So I went appropriate, I think.
Okay, for sure. Okay.
So
now,
are there different, when you're writing a kid's song, are you thinking of like sort of an age range?
In a sense, yeah. Like I really have sort of two... oeuvres, oeuvres of children's work. And one of them is for really little children. Right. What we typically think of children's music, sort of lullaby type stuff and simple songs. And the other oeuvre is for older kids who are reading, who are maybe into a little bit of the satirical takes on things. Mm-hmm. So there's a kind of almost young adult collection of material that I have, and then there's some the really
infant
stuff.
What are the age groups there?
Well, I would say the early stuff, which is recorded by my group called the Teds, would be from babies to maybe as old as 7, and then you might have some secret admirers who are 9 and 10, you know, and their parents. I think that you really include their parents or caregivers. Mm-hmm. And then the older set of tunes, and there is a vast intersection in them, I think, which appeals to either age group. Right. But the older group, I would say, would be 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, like that.
What's the biggest danger if somebody, one of our listeners, said, I'm going to write for kids, I want to try this. What's the biggest danger they should watch out for? What should they not do?
Give your least. I find... you know, because we can all go and find sort of knocked off poems for kids that, okay, there's some rhymes. But I think the danger is giving them substandard material. So make sure you're going to do it well. And maybe you have to write 10 poems to get one poem. But I think kids deserve... It sounds like I'm being big-headed, which I'm not intending to. But right. I think you do have to make, you know, art.
Well kids would know when it's not real, wouldn't they? Wouldn't kids pick up that they're being condescended to or kind of...
A certain age would. I think you can go into you know, really young kids' classes and, you know, do poo-poo songs or something, and you'll get a delighted reaction, but, you know...
You know what? You're talking about, like...
I hear. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about simple songs, and I was always reminded of Inchworm, which is a beautiful song, but... Now, I'm not sure if it started off as a kid's song, but it's been, you know, adapted by so many fantastic jazz players and explored, and it's a beautiful piece of music.
Well, strangely, I've never heard of that song before tonight, but Dave was talking about it. Dave Hines, who's here to play some guitar, was talking about it and telling me the basic hook line story of it, but I've never actually heard that song.
I think you have to.
It
sounds familiar.
Yeah. Dave can't really sing, so he tried to.
he plays guitar.
He's great looking, by the way. He's a great looking guy. But I think, like, when I was a little boy, there was that song, and it was a big hit for everybody. It was "How Much Is That Doggy in the Window?"
Yes.
You know, I mean, that's clearly a kid's song, but at that point in time, it was for everybody. So there are those songs that we think now would be always called kid songs that started out for everybody.
Well, that's true, and especially when we hear some of the old songs that we, you know, nursery rhymes we grew up with, we find out they're about the Black Death and things like that.
Right,
so, yeah, there's always a dark side.
Yes.
I think we grew up in a much darker time, kid-wise. Let's hear the first song. So the first song you want to do is...
Home.
All right, so let's talk about this.
Okay.
Now, you seem to have a lot of words.
Yep.
What was the process for writing this one?
I was talking a little bit about those loop songs where it's, you know, it's a kind of a loop of a poem that you can substitute different things into it, and that will inform what you write in the sort of the after. So in this case, I'm writing a poem about the various environments that are homes to different creatures, and sort of evoking the environment, and occasionally throwing in little animal sounds that are relative to the creature that we're talking about.
So is this song the younger kids, or is this song intended for the older kids?
This would be for young kids. Mm-hmm. You know, I do. I think some probably older than 8 or 9 would like it as well.
Yeah.
But it's from the Ted's repertoire, which I think of as being for the little kids. So
let's hear it.
All right. Mr. Hines. Oh, the sea is wide and the sea is wild. It crashes in bubbles and foam.
The sea is a watery wilderness, but to a whale it's home, blob home, to a whale it's home, and we all like to come back home, whatever we wish when we ramble or roam, whether out for a sail or just down in the dale, we all like to come back home. Oh, the wind is wide and the wind is wild, from Tokyo to Rio to Rome. The wind is a blustery wilderness, but to a bird it's home, tweet home, to a bird it's home, and we all like to come back home. Whatever we whoosh when we ramble or roam, whether out for a sail or just down in the dale, we all like to come back home. Oh, the north is wide and the north is wild, but Vladivostok to Nome. The north is a beautiful wilderness, to a polar bear it's home, brr, home, to a polar bear it's home, and we all like to come back home, whatever we wish when we ramble or roam, whether up to the pole or just out for a stroll, we all like to come back home. A meadow's wide and a meadow's wild, it sweetens in the honeycomb. A meadow is a little wee wilderness, but to a bee it's home, buzz home, to a bee it's home, and we all like to come back home, whatever we wish when we ramble or roam, whether up to the mountain or just to the fountain, we all like to come back home. Oh, the forest wide and the forest wild, the leaves make a flowery loam. A forest is a beautiful wilderness, but to a deer it's home, green home, to a deer it's home, and we all like to come back home, whatever we wish when we ramble or roam, whether up to the Sioux or just out to the zoo, we all like to come back home. Oh, the earth is wide and the earth is wild, from the Mekong to Lake Ontario. The earth is a rolling green wilderness, and to all of us it's home, sweet home, to all of us it's home, and we all share the same green home, whatever we wish when we ramble or roam, whether up to the moon or just out of the room, we all like to come back home. Everybody needs a home.
Ooh, lovely. Great.
That was Home by Robert Priest here on Song Talk Radio with Bruce Neal and Phil.
And Alan Booth, by the
and
way.
And Alan Booth, yeah. Thank you. Fine, fine guitar playing.
On that. Alan Booth's the writer.
Is the melody writer.
Oh, the melody writer.
Yes.
So you wrote the words, Alan Booth wrote the melody.
Yeah, for this well, the next one it won't be the same, but we will get to that.
This is wonderfully mellow, like the chorus. I really love the chorus. It's got this wonderful lift, which is so nice. And a really interesting structure. A lot of verses, which is sort of an interesting difference from standard pop song. You have, I guess we'd call it a pre-chorus, I think. Which is the Green Home
Deed
to
home.
The Deer's Home, which I thought was kind of neat. It was sort of different. And a lot of real... one interesting thing I wanted to mention is you have a line here that I thought was actually pretty wordy for a kid's song. From
Vladivostok to Nome.
Vladivostok.
Which I thought was kind of fun.
What's Vladivostok?
Ask your mommy and
Yes. Ask daddy.
But the details within the chorus itself, how you had you know, whether up to the pole or just out for a stroll.
Yes.
Whether up to the moon or just out of the room.
Yeah.
That was I really love that, how you have a consistent chorus and then these little variations within the chorus.
Yeah.
That is so tasty. And I think it really does show you that you brought your A game to this song.
Oh, thank you.
It wasn't less like, well, let's repeat the chorus, which I think people would normally do for a kid's song.
It was a balance between, well, if I just make it the same in those two lines all the way through, then getting people to sing along is easier. And I had to forego that in order to be clever and do pole, stroll, and see tree and all that. But it seemed like it was worth it to have the variety in the song. Hmm. So that's what we did.
Now, there was a lot of verses.
Yes, and you can pick and choose, really. I mean, you know, and I can make up new ones as well. I have, over time, made up, you know, one about a tree and stuff. Or other people, that's my favorite thing, is to sort of like, okay, your turn, now you make up one. Whether you're an adult and you just want to make up one, or you're a kid in school and you want to make up one.
But kids love repetition, yes?
Yeah.
Younger kids love repetition because they want to hear it again, and you don't want to challenge them with, you know, three movements and three variations and a coda, right? So it goes back to a simple folk song style.
Yeah.
And I think kids are expecting something new each time as you come around, a bit like Old MacDonald Had a Farm.
Yeah.
There's a great expectation. Now we're going to have a pig. And I love that you put the animal sounds in there, like just dropped them in, right?
Thank you,
Did you do it when you recorded it? Did you make it an actual sound, or just you pretending to be a
I think it's just us. I can't remember.
Yeah. Anyway.
There might be some actual sampled animal sounds in the recording.
Again, I think kids just love that.
Yeah.
They love when adults, I think, are a bit silly, but you're being there.
Yeah, you can, exactly, yeah. Yeah, like you can see a four-year-old on the lap waiting for, you know, tweet home, he said tweet home, you know. So that's the kind of mindset you float yourself into to write these kind of things.
Have parents ever contacted you and said, my kid is now asked to hear this for the 300th time and it's driving me completely insane? You wish.
No, not that. I've had actual grown-ups say, you know, I love this, I play it in the car.
Oh,
and they
nice.
Play it for themselves.
Nice. Right.
Which is, I love that.
Yeah.
There's a repertoire of my stuff which is recorded by a band I was in called The Boinks, which is the more satirical stuff.
Oh, The Boinks.
And that's just been remastered and will be re-released. And that's the one that, because it's a kind of a sci-fi rock opera type thing, that I'm beginning now to get feedback from people is, I loved this as a kid and stuff, you know, and that's really, it feels good, you know.
Well, I'm thinking about the Disney movies. I remember about 20 years ago, I think it was Aladdin was the breakthrough, is they planted jokes for the parent in the audience,
right?
And so the kids wouldn't get it, but the parents are going,
yeah.
So, like, it's wonderful that, obviously, you have your main audience for the purchase of the piece, such as it is these days, is the adult. The child has to like it, of course, but the adult has to enjoy it too, or they're not going to want to play it all the time for the kid.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
What do you think, Neil?
Yeah, I really liked it. I mean, there's the interesting use of the language. Actually, there is a level of sophistication in it, right? Like it's not dumbing down to the kids like you were talking about before, right?
Right.
Because they're going to come out of this going, what the heck is Vladistok? I'm not even sure what the leaves make a flowery loam means.
Oh, really?
I've never heard the word loam before.
Loam is soil.
Soil.
Okay.
Yeah, when you
rich
have rotting
soil.
Vegetable matter, it's loam.
Yeah. And certainly when I was a kid, I'd be like, what does that mean?
What does that mean? And then they'd say, well, in my day, they'd say, look it up. But now they'd say, go on, ask Google.
Yeah, yes.
And you were running out of om rhymes at that point.
When I did this song on Sesame Street, and instead of Vladivostok to Nome, they wanted Canadian. I put two Canadian. Maybe I kept Nome. Maybe it was Nunavut. I think I changed. Yeah, Vladivostok is just on the near Japan and Russia.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. And everything seems like it's perfectly rhymed throughout from top to bottom.
It's an interesting point, though. You're talking about repetition. And in Malcolm Gladwell's first book, I think, was that the one that was called Blink? I'm not sure.
I think Outliers was first, but I could be wrong. I don't know.
No, it was before Outliers.
Oh, yeah?
Okay. And they actually talked about doing some research when they did Sesame Street, because Sesame Street had stuff for kids, but it had lots of sort of these inside jokes that the parents would like Alistair Cookie and, you know, really, I mean, it's really, really funny stuff, actually, as adult. But they watched kids watching Sesame Street. And what would happen is when the adult stuff came on, the kids totally tuned out. And so they took the research from that and they came up with Teletubbies. And if you watch kids watch Teletubbies, they're just hypnotized by it because they watched kids watching TV and they figured out what kids like. And Teletubbies does it. It's fascinating stuff.
Yeah.
When you watch it with those kinds of eyes, because you start seeing the way certain kinds of repetition and there's a certain kind of pacing that is actually in the show. It's really fascinating to really watch it.
But I don't imagine you're taking that type of approach, are you, Robert?
I didn't have studies done.
I'm going to give the kids exactly what they want to hear or what you maybe suppose is super kiddie friendly.
Right. More so in the little kid songs.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, as a poet, I always like the idea of a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, I'm getting that impression.
Yeah. So there's a bit of that. You don't want too much of it in kids' music. But, yeah, I think that if they have to find out what the odd thing means or just a word gets stuck in their head that they don't know, I've done, my job is done.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, as a kid, there's lots of stuff you don't know. Mm. I mean, there's many things you don't know. So just having a word in a song is like...
Yeah.
I still don't know most things.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, there's definitely more I don't know than
there
I do.
There you go,
for sure.
Quite a large amount.
So when we're kids' song this, about quantum physics.
So when we're looking at this song, what is, like, have you had to go through it and sort of do a lot of editing and polishing?
This the home song. You know, I think it came fairly, like, I didn't get all those stroll pole rhymes off the top, but once I had the first verse, then, you know, to just slowly write the rest of them to fit that one is, it wasn't I have spent really long times writing things, but this one actually came fairly smoothly. Yeah.
Yeah, because there's a lot to it. I mean, it's interesting how it's all very tightly, it's very tight in terms of concept all the way through, and of course at the end, where you kind of macro it, and you bring sort of the whole world into it, which I thought was quite neat.
And I got the Mekong in there. I was pleased to get the Mekong
in
there.
Yeah, it was nice.
It's like it's in Vietnam.
Yeah.
And the Mekong to Lake Ontario. Yeah. I liked that little run.
So now
very well done, Robert.
When you're playing this song to kids, what's the response like? Do you...
I've usually done my funny stuff first. I do immediately entertaining stuff off the top. So there's not such an overt response to this, but it's for, you know, the thoughtful kids as well, the kids who don't need to be, what do you call it, edutained.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So, but it's a warm response, and the adults like it, and they'll often, you know, can you do one with about this? And, you know, there'll be requests for,
Do that live?
No.
Next time.
Not this one. I do have a song called Darth Orange, which is about Darth Vader, that I can make up new verses.
It's the orange.
I've done thousands of them.
Is that what he has for breakfast?
No, it's about if Darth Vader was an orange, and at the end he turns into orange juice.
Well, why don't they're talking about
exactly. I'm waiting for him to fall so I can resurrect that tune.
For those of you just joining us, you're listening to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil on CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto. We're streaming live on songtalk.ca, and tonight Robert Priest is talking about the children's songs he's written. Robert is a poet, novelist, and songwriter. Don't forget, we love to hear from you. We love to hear from you parents out there or kids about what you think about this children's song thing, Song Talk Radio. Email feedback at songtalk.ca, and we'll share your thoughts live on the air. And you can find links to all the products, books, and web services we mention on the show on our resources page at songtalk.ca. And coming up on Song Talk Radio in the coming weeks, we have next week, 13th, Patrick Ballantyne returns with a closer look at two of his favorite songs, which, stay tuned, we don't know what those are yet, do we?
No, we don't. Mm. Surprise, surprise.
And then, speaking of being funny, Patrick, or Robert, rather, March 20th, it's all about the comedy song.
Ah.
So then want to tune into that one. We're going to look at a few different. I'm going to start with Tom Lehrer, and we're going to work up from there. If you're in the Toronto area, please join us at our next Songwriters Meetup on Sunday, March 25th, from 1 to 4. I'll be the host host that day. That's at the Transact Club on Brunswick, 35 years plus, I think, there. It's free to join on meetup.com and free to attend the meetup. You can stop by songtalk.ca anytime for a link to meetup.com. Back to you, Phil.
Thanks very much. So, one thing we like to do is we like to always give our listeners presents if we can.
Yes.
So we're going to give away your latest book.
Prizes for the kiddies.
My latest book is called The Wolf Is Back.
The Wolf Is Back.
From Woolsack and Wynn. And it's for the, you know, it's not for the little wee kids. But yeah, that's, what do they have to do to get this book?
The first person to send us an email or a tweet.
Pretty easy. Pretty easy.
Yep.
What's
I'll
that tweet
read you the
address
shortest
again?
Poem in it, if you like.
What's that tweet
at
again?
At Song Talk Radio.
At Song Talk Radio.
Or feedback at songtalk.ca.
There you go.
Read us an excerpt.
Here's the shortest poem in here. It's called My Wish for You. I wish for you as I wish for me. May you never be bullied, nor a bully be.
Yes.
Wow, that is great.
That's a good message.
I didn't waste words in that one.
No. Convincing there.
I have friends who are actually, you know, quite accomplished poets, and they always tell me those short little ones can actually be just the devil trying to get polished. Mm. That they just, like, this little paragraph of text is just something that takes so long to bash away at. Was that one of them?
I wrote pages and pages of bully stuff, trying to find a way into the topic without just being some other guy, you know.
Right.
And there's another longer bully poem here, but I have the power not to be a bully, which I think is a nice take on it. But this one was just a little extra verse. How can I make that into a longer poem? And eventually I said, no, actually, it's just what it should be. So, you know, I tend to write lots and rapidly and edit later, but sometimes in the stream of stuff that comes, there'll be nice little chunks.
So in your writing style, are you just basically like putting everything that's in your brain out and then going back afterwards and sifting through it?
Yep. I do that a lot, yeah. I mean, sometimes it's also, you know, you get that first verse, if it's a lyric, and then you have to slow down if you want to really, if it's an unusual structure, but you want to match it each time. So then I will slow down and write carefully. Different strokes for me.
I think you may have addressed this last time you were on the show, Robert, but do you start with, I'm going to write a poem today, or I'm going to write a song, or do you just start writing in whatever it wants to become, it becomes? Do you ever write a poem and then decide later, this could be a good song?
Well, it's like, I typically do write every day, and sometimes I do have a set regimen, especially if I have to finish a novel. Mm-hmm. And I might even say, you cannot write poetry today, you've got to write that novel.
Right.
You know, but on a free day, I know somewhere in there I'm probably going to have a go at a song lyric and probably at a poem. You know.
But you're always conscious about this is going to be a song lyric.
Yeah, mostly because it rhymes.
Okay.
Yeah, obviously, particularly the children's poems, but my adult poems tend to rhyme too, whereas my adult songs rhyme, but my poems don't typically. I did some sonnets lately.
That's how you can tell they're smart.
Yeah.
Because they don't rhyme.
That's, you know, so I just impress the professors.
Yes. So I want to talk about your daily writing process. Like, you're very disciplined. I mean, you got, you know, two children's novels, three children's albums, four CDs of songs and poems, and 10 books of poetry. So
that's my old bio. I have four children's novels.
Oh, four. Well, yeah, you got to update Wikipedia then.
I did send a new one last night, but it's okay.
So what is your daily schedule? I mean, are you seem to be quite disciplined.
Yeah, and that has kind of happened over time. You know, when I was in my 20s, it was like, you know, when the mood seizes me, I will go write a poem. And that might not have been every day, but, you know, it's particularly as you get commissioned over time, or, you know, have a novel to finish, that tends to put you into that groove of writing every day. And once I, you know, so it doesn't have to be a novel. It's just you've got now this space of time that you fill up with writing, and sometimes, you know, so that's how I gravitated into that sort of grid I'm in, which is workaholicism, I'm afraid. It is probably a bit much, and it takes its toll on your shoulders and neck. But, but it's just I found I could do it, and it's such a delight to do. It feels like as close to magic as I'm going to get. It's like, oh, I could go and do the dishes, or I could write a poem.
Mm-hmm. You know? That's okay, well, I want to get really specific because, you know, I think a lot of people have trouble maintaining their work. So what? Okay, so you wake up in the morning, you have a coffee. What do you like?
Oh, okay. I wake up in the morning. I do. You got that bit. I have a coffee and I have my first breakfast. And then after my first breakfast, I exercise. I exercise for about half an hour. And then
what time is that, Robert?
You know, I'm probably exercising at about 9 o'clock.
You're up at 8?
Yeah. Okay. And I'm watching the comedy from the last. I'm watching Trevor and Noah and Colbert and Seth Meyers. I'm watching their monologues as I exercise, which gets me smiling. And there's wit and political humor in what they do. Then I have my second breakfast. And then I head upstairs and I do my sort of ordinary kind of businessy type work. And I walk the dog. And then come the afternoon after lunch, that's typically when I'm going to get loosened up and start writing whatever I have to write.
Now, but you have commissions, right? You're writing to deadline because somebody's waiting for it, or is this?
I wish right now that were the case.
Okay,
but,
it's not always the case.
Those four novels, that was the case. It was like, especially the third book of a trilogy. You know, and you've got to be good. Like, you've done all that work, and, you know, and it's, you work, yeah. That
was the most important. So the routine changes depending on what the current projects are.
I'm trying to be a little kinder to myself now because I just drive myself like a slave. You know, as I said, it is magical, and I'm not particularly complaining, but, you know, I should live a life a bit, too.
So, okay, so you're generally writing in the afternoons?
Afternoons, evenings, sometimes late at night. Like,
so like
how long?
So like from like 1 o'clock till like 5 or 1 o'clock to 9 or?
At least to 9, probably to 10. And when it's really happening, I'm going till like 1 because I have a voice to text device, by the way, so that some of it is just spoken, right?
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Now, do you find that process a bit different than actually writing it down?
It is.
Paper?
It is. I think, you know, there's a different authority to what is typed and to what is spoken. I think it's just inherent in our particular culture. It's particularly writing novels for children. Well, if they sound okay spoken, that's probably not bad. Mm. You know, in my poetry, I write a lot of neologisms, and the word processor thing can't get those. I have to type those because it will spell correct everything I make up. You know,
that's true.
Totally annoying.
What software do you use for the voice to text?
What is it called? I can see the green thing. Man,
it's not Siri. It's not like Siri or something.
I do sometimes. I have used my iPhone with Siri in the backyard, sitting on a chaise lounge and dictating into.
Cool.
I've done some work that way.
Mm-hmm.
What is it called? I can't remember. I'll remember in a second when I'm not trying to remember.
Do you get a day off, Robert?
Do I get a day off? Not particularly. Mm. No. No, that's what I'm... I am trying to sort of just, you know, like, go for walks with my wife and stuff like that more than...
Well, you want to keep her happy, too. That's a good idea.
Yes, yeah. Like, the poems please her a lot, but...
See her every once in a while.
Yeah, exactly.
Really, I think the takeaway you're getting at, Phil, here is that, like, everyone's process obviously is different, right? So, you know, if you're trying to get into a routine, like, we had a songwriter, Alon Rudovinsky, who decided he was going to write a song a day for a year.
Right.
And, you know, good or bad or indifferent, right? And that was his routine, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, some people, you know, and we've talked about this many times. Bruce, you mentioned this, the morning pages where you get up in the morning every day.
I wouldn't be good in the afternoon. My energy goes down in the afternoon.
Right.
So I when I wrote the songs for my album, it was I got up and I got to a table with a pen and paper and it just went whoosh. You know, that's kind of limerence between sleep and awake. There's that moment where the critic hasn't woken up yet, but the creativity has.
Yes.
So that was the trick, is that before the critic got awake, I would just slip in these 3 or 4 pages and out would come full songs in the midst of just a dump of, of stuff.
It depends on what you're doing and it depends on your personality type.
There's so many factors.
Yeah, but if you're serious, I think the point is for our listeners out there, if you're serious, you have to write a lot to get some good stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
It takes work, you know, and I think that's the issue, is it does take work. I mean, even if it's fun, you still need to be focused. So let's hear the... Can we hear another song,
Daddy?
Yes, we should. So this next one is Ships of Bath.
The Ships of Bath.
And so what was writing this one like?
Well, this is one where I wrote the words and music to the verses in my head. And then my songwriting partner, Alan Booth, wrote the bridge music, and also I'm pretty sure he must have changed the chords and, you know, on that. So that's sort of partly why I chose this one, just because so I can make the point that I do write some of the melodies. So yeah, I heard this melody kind of, I think that's how it started, with the melody, and then I put the words to it, and it was, who are those two English guys who write like this?
Lennon and McCartney?
Those English guys.
That's what I was going to... No, the old guys, the Victorian guys.
Gilbert and Sullivan.
Gilbert and Sullivan. Ah. Sort of like, yeah. You know, that kind of music.
Operator.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm. All right.
I should tell you that I have a new verse here.
Ooh, oh, okay.
So this will be the world debut of the...
Listen, wow.
It's pretty verse.
Okay, kids, yeah. Listen up.
Okay, Mr. Hines, Davy Hines, who's been so patient here. The ships of Bath, they set to sea, a tub, a tug, and a little dinghy. The soap on the bottom was a green submarine. They went away dirty, but they came back clean. The ships of Bath sailed in a fleet, and past the land of knees to the Isles of Feet. They couldn't go around them, so they had to go between. They went away dirty, but they came back clean. Captain had a dirty face, cookie had a dirty neck. Oh, the cabin boy had dirty hair, the bosun was dirty everywhere. The ships of Bath, 7 days afloat, a toilet paper roll for a telescope. They searched the far horizon, no islands could be seen. They went away dirty, but they came back clean. Here we go. The sea of Bath, it was all a foam when the tug and the dinghy came home. Their mothers ran to meet them, singing, oh, where have you been? You went away dirty, but you've come back. You went away dirty, but you've come back. You went away dirty, but you've come back. You're almost clean.
Great. Thank you.
That was Ships of Bath.
Very much
by
in the
Robert Priest on Song Talk Radio.
Yeah.
Ships of Bath.
No, very, very much in the Gilbert and Sullivan style.
Yes,
so you did operatic melody.
Especially that line, the with a green submarine.
Yes. And obviously a little Beatles in there, not necessarily melodically, but, you know.
Yeah, but it's
another submarine song.
Gilbert and Sullivan, old English operetta in the style of melody, and also the going into the falsetto and that. But it was lovely. It was lots of fun. And I love, again, the repetition. Like in any good song, they went away dirty, you come back clean, and then paying that off at the end, which is
interesting.
Was
how you had, there's actually almost like a bridge.
Yeah, Captain
there,
had a dirty face, Cookie had a dirty face. Yeah.
It's not almost a bridge. It was a bridge.
Yeah.
It was a bridge. And there are other ones in here that, and in my other books, where there's bridges, because I think they have an existence as poems and as songs. And who says that rhyming poems have to have the same structure all the way through? A bridge poetically isn't a bad thing necessarily.
So this was a poem first and then a song?
No, this one actually was a melody. I'm pretty sure it was a melody first. And it doesn't happen often to me that I actually hear independently a melody in my head. Mm-hmm. But then it's fun to write to the melody.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. So
yeah, it's...
You usually start with a lyric then.
Most often I do. In the old days, when I was in my 20s and I would write songs, I would write them in my head. And I would, you know, walk, and that would be the beat. And I would hear a combination, really, in my head. Mm. You know, and I would have a hell of a time finding the chords, because I'm not that adept.
What was your instrument initially?
The first thing I ever learned to play was a harp, and then a trumpet. Well, actually, I learned to play quite loosely. And then guitar, which I didn't play in time. I just played boom, 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 you know, one beat all the way through. So right. when I got with right. bands, they were like, what are you doing?
That happens quite often.
This is very interesting because they, like the repetition of they went away dirty, but they came back clean. It sort of unifies the whole thing together, yeah. obviously, mm-hmm. right? But the interesting thing about it to me was that the rest of the verse melody goes like da 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 da, but at the very end is but they came back clean,
right?
Yeah. You know, when you kind of half time it.
Just I guess that's, yeah.
And then just sort of put that little tag on the end, which sort of brings it to a nice little conclusive bit, and then you know you're moving on to the next section.
Yeah, it really shows
section,
so variety kind of, like of phrasing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It kind of breaks it up, you know.
It's an audio signpost.
Yes.
Yeah.
There you go.
Rhythmic and audio.
I was saying to Dave earlier that, I mean, narratively, you wouldn't, you know, in the typical narrative, you wouldn't say they went away dirty, but they came back clean in each verse, because that's the ending of the story. That's a spoiler alert, but it's okay. Little kids, it's all right. You're going to get back.
And I loved what you did at the end.
Oh, thank you.
I love those that repeating of the last two lines. Yeah. You know, it's a very classic songwriting thing to do, but I always appreciate that.
If you hear the recording, which it's going to be up on, Al is right now remastering and remixing this particular album, and he's got a lot of synthetic horns and tubas and stuff, and it really matches the lyric that way.
Nice. This really lends itself to illustration.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
That's so. Oh, did you published your song lyrics in the book?
This book here, Day Songs, Night Songs, was a book tape package.
Okay.
In the old days, you remember tape. Yeah.
I still have some.
Yeah. It was sort of like put on the back with plastic all over it so people couldn't open the book. But anyway,
there are illustrations in there.
Yes, there are illustrations.
Because you have some lovely imagery. You've got the soap was a green submarine and the land of knees. Like you can imagine your knees sticking out and that's these little mountains.
The Isles of Feet.
And it's really visual, which I think kids appreciate as well. Well, adults do too. But you see it's dirty face, dirty neck, dirty hair, dirty everywhere. And I notice in the lyric here you had the sea of bubbles you changed it to.
Yes.
Did you change that back to
sea
of bath?
I don't know if I've fallen into saying the sea of bath, but the sea of bubbles.
You said it was all of foam. I was waiting for that.
It was all of foam. I didn't need the bubbles because I make the point.
Sea of all of foam. Exactly. And I think it's... Well, delightful.
That's an interesting point just from a sort of poetics standpoint. Like for kids' songs, you're not going to go to metaphor and really heavy-duty imagery and things like that. But just by sort of putting in the spins on things and introducing, you know, certain elements, like Bruce was saying, the land of knees and the Isles of Feet and all that sort of stuff, it introduces a level of poetry that goes beyond the kind of rudimentary, simple... literal storytelling.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like it's kind of elevated a little bit.
Okay. And it's in a kid's world. Like you could see a kid in the bath and say, my knees are islands, okay?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You know, it's sort of from that lexicon
of don't touch my
kid
feet.
Thought.
That's the alligators.
Yeah,
don't go near the alligators. And you wiggle your feet and go, ah. Right.
So
you guys do bathe. Okay, good.
No, I shower. I don't really.
At least once a month.
I haven't had a bath
so,
in years.
Some people on the in the songwriting Facebook group, we're asking. They have a whole bunch of children's poems and kind of lyrics, and they're not sure what to do with it because I think to be a children's songwriter, I think you do need a specific approach or an intended approach, I suppose.
Yeah.
So someone has all this stuff and they're thinking, well, should I turn it into a book? Should I turn it into a bunch of songs? Would you have any advice on where they would go with that?
Well, turning kids' poems into a book, and I'm blessed to have the amount that I do, it's a hard sell because poetry, you know, the word is that it doesn't sell that well. Tell Shel Silverstein or Dennis Lee because they sell just fine. But it depends, I guess, on their intention and their access to music. If you don't have, you know, a composer lined up or you're not a composer, then I would say, yeah, you go for a book.
but you know your age group. You know who is the median kind of, what is the median kind of age for this stuff?
Right.
Or is that particular one there a picture book? And should I send that one poem to some company as a picture book? I have books that are just one poem, with a lot of illustrations. Thank you very much. Great. So, I guess it's partly your intent and partly on what's going to be accessible to you. And check them out with kids. You know, make sure that kids like them.
Right.
So I would encourage anybody to do this. I think, you know, that it's, at the very least, it's a fun thing to do. And it can be a very enriching and bonding thing to do, to share your creative life with children, which is my children, Dan and Eli. I wrote the little kid stuff for them when they were little, and it's, you know, I'm not a very touchy-feely guy, so it was at least something I could contribute of a loving nature to them.
Interesting.
I think
they
still think it's good.
I do wonder if, you know, if that's writing kids' songs would be easier if you actually have kids. I mean, I don't have anything against kids. I'm fine with them as a concept.
Yes,
you know, I think they're good. But
I think it's not whether you have. Like, I don't think Dennis Lee. I don't think he has kids. Although I think he was focused on a stepson. And I don't think Shel Silverstein has kids. I hope not. but they just had access to kid mind, and maybe they had a favorite nephew. Like, I think it's probably you do need to be. You have some plug in to kid culture, current kid culture.
Right.
Yeah.
No, because it seems that kid culture is kind of different now than it would have been 15 years ago.
Yeah.
So it's...
What is it now?
Or a generation ago.
Is it more a style of hip-hop and that, or is it really changed? Is it more sophisticated?
You know, depending on... I think certainly for the older kids, it's going to be hip-hop stuff that excites a 13-year-old.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't particularly do that. But little kids, all over the world, I've traveled somewhat widely, and, you know, they all like a simple melodic song that they can get in on. You know,
have you traveled to a country where you had to translate the song and sing it in a different language?
No.
You only sing in English then?
I just sing in English,
right. But have you been to countries where they don't necessarily understand
Canada?
English?
Like, I went up to Attawapiskat, which is, I think we talked about that a bit last time, and which is a native reserve, an indigenous reserve, way up on James Bay. And I quickly found that some of the references in my poems that were to most common things around here didn't particularly resonate with them. And so it was like, I sent you earlier a song called Plasticine, and it's about the various things you make from plasticine. And it's very simple. So I could use that as a kind of a translating device and say, so what would you want plasticine to turn into? And they give me their word for goose, which I can't quite non something that starts with N. And then so we could use Cree language within a sort of, English framework. And I found that was just, that blew my mind. Loved that.
That's so neat. Yeah. Well, also, there's in Canada, there's a lot of, I'm not going to say pressure, but it's very common for people to have bilingual kids' songs.
I have a little bit of that.
Do you?
Yeah. I have pomme de terre in a poem. But I'm not particularly bilingual, so I better not fake it.
Yes, because that can be a definite challenge.
Yeah.
So what's coming up for you in terms of... now, you're releasing... Did you say you're releasing a new book, or...?
The three children's albums, The Boinks, which is called Summer Long, Winter Long, which is already up on Spotify by the Teds, and the stuff that I played today, which is from Lullabies and Play Songs, have all recently been remastered and in one case remixed and made digitally available, so that you should be able to get all my children's stuff on Spotify, CD Baby, etc. I'm going up to Attawapiskat again in May. That's kind of my next children's gig.
Right.
That's to go into the schools and stuff.
But my adult band is playing at Grossman's on the 24th.
Ah, fun.
And we will not be doing these songs.
No.
If you want to hear those songs, check out Robert's earlier episode.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which will any of it be explicit, Robert, or not so much?
I have one song that's...
Open for it, please?
I have explicit songs, yeah. Yeah, but that's not the sort of core value in them, but I do have some swear words in songs.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's...
Which, should I say them? No.
March 24th. At Grossman's,
okay. Yeah. Yeah.
It's great. It's amazing to see how much work you're actually able to get done. And I really admire that, and that's why I wanted to find out about your process.
Yeah.
People don't realize that you do have to set yourself a bit of a schedule to actually sometimes accomplish things.
It becomes a habit, but habit. Mm-hmm. And I think of work as kind of slow magic. You know,
right.
So instead of a spell, you have to actually make it, but you still make it.
But do you still love it?
I do.
So a day without writing would be like a day without sunshine?
It's like February.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I have a good friend in LA, and he's like that. He has to write every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, you know?
Yeah.
As I say, I am trying to slightly train myself out of it, because you should be able to, you know, feel good about yourself.
It's not a bad dependency, though, if you keep churning out books. It's a good thing.
Exactly. Exactly. It's what
you
I should do.
A lot of stuff,
there's the band.
There's the band. Because that's all the time we have tonight on Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil. We'd like to thank our guest, Mr. Robert Priest. Thank you so
great
much for coming
song
back.
Thank you.
And our guitarist.
David Hines.
David Hines. Thank you, David Hines.
Fine playing you.
Awesome
stuff. So, if people want to get to you, how do they get to you?
Poempainter.com is my website.
Poempainter.com,
yeah.
All right.
And I'm on Facebook as Robert Priest 1. I'm the first of the Robert Priests.
If you look for Robert Priest on YouTube, you will find him.
Yeah.
And on YouTube, okay.
Yep.
We'll definitely include all those links in the show notes. Please send us your impressions via Twitter at Song Talk Radio, via email at feedback@songtalk.ca, Facebook and YouTube at Song Talk Radio, or stop by the site at songtalk.ca. Please subscribe to the Song Talk Radio podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or at Stitcher.com. And don't forget to sign up for the free newsletter at songtalk.ca. Don't forget, you can always find the links to all the products, books, and web services we mentioned here on Song Talk Radio on the resources page over at the site. If you are in the Toronto area, please join us at our next Songwriters Meetup, Sunday, March 25th, from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Transact Club. Free to join on meetup.com and free to attend the meetup. Stop by songtalk.ca/meetup for all those juicy details. We'd like to thank CJRU 1280 AM for putting up with all our shenanigans and horseplay. We'd like to thank Vanessa Vreeland for taking care of social media and keeping us on track. Linda Lavender for making us sound so darn good.
Woo-hoo!
And most of all, we'd like to thank you, the home listener. If you're on Twitter, you can follow Neil at
neilmody.com website.
You can follow Bruce at
bruceharrett.com.
You can follow Mr. Priest. Do you have a
poempainter.com?
Okay.
No one uses Twitter, Phil.
Oh, Twitter. Yeah, I'm on Twitter as Robert Priest 1, I think.
All right.
Well,
and
you
of course, Linda Lavender
at lindalavender.com.
And, of course, me at D. Phil Emery. Please stop by the website at songtalk.ca.
Sunny_Vanessa.
Yes.
What about David?
No, he doesn't want to be fathered. Followed.
He's modest, shy, and
leave me
please
alone.
Please stop by the website at songtalk.ca to browse past shows, find out how you can be a guest on our show, and all those other great things. Thanks so much for listening. Good night, everyone.
Keep on writing.
Good night.
Good night.